Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, February 28th, 2020 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece about the coronavirus outbreak called "There's More Than Just Buying a Mask" by Deborah Pressey, Champaign. Rising fear about the spread of coronavirus disease, COVID-19, has wiped out the supply of face masks at several local stores. But unless you buy the right kind of facial protection device and know how to fit and wear it properly, it won't do you much good anyway, local health officials warned. It's not as simple as slapping a mask on your face, said Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride. Pride posted a coronavirus COVID-19 update on Facebook this week, advising the community to stock up on enough food, medicine, and other supplies to be able to stay home for 2 weeks if that becomes necessary. There aren't any cases in Champaign County, she said, but epidemics can occur quickly as the virus spreads around the world. There are currently 60 known cases in the U.S., and our guess is that's just the tip of the iceberg, Pride said. About those facial masks, Pride said she's seen people wearing the wrong kinds of facial protection and wearing masks incorrectly, including, in one case, someone with a mask on upside down, all over the community. I see people all the time in masks, and I just want to scream, "You're not wearing that right," she said. The proper device will be labeled a NIOSH-approved N95 respirator, and healthcare workers who use them are fit-tested to make sure they're sealed properly, Pride said. We don't want people to have a false sense of security, she said. N95 respirators are intended to fit closely and can block very small particles. They're not intended for use by children and people with facial hair, and even worn correctly, they won't completely eliminate the risk of illness and death, according to the Food and Drug Administration. Face surgical masks, on the other hand, are more loose-fitting masks that can help block large particle droplets. Worn by someone with the flu or respiratory symptoms, they can help protect others from the spread of germs through coughing and sneezing. Dr. Robert Healy, Chief Medical Quality Officer at Carle, said Carle has a good supply of N95 respirator masks for its caregivers, and these masks are really intended to be worn by people who aren't sick taking care of people who are. He also warned that N95 respirators are going to be ineffective for people who don't know how to fit and use them. You need training to use them effectively, he said. People just buying them and trying to use them, probably not effective. Both Ace Hardware stores in Champaign are sold out of respirator masks and others. Jerry Davis, manager at the Ace Hardware store at 2811 West Kirby Avenue, Champaign, said that store did have N95 respirators and other masks, but they're sold out, and unfortunately, all the vendors are out of them now. That store also was stocking a paper disposable mask, he said, and customers bought all those too. We're completely out of everything because people are getting desperate now, he said. Mark Brune, manager at the Ace Hardware at 2021 South Neal Street, Champaign, said that store has been sold out of N95 respirator masks for days, and customers continue to ask for them. As far as I understand, they won't be available in this area till about April, he said. Carrie Miller, the front-end manager at Menards, Champaign, said that store also has sold out of the supply it had. Pride urged everyone looking to buy N95 respirator masks to consider that these masks are going to be most urgently needed by healthcare workers, and supply is running low. She and Healy also advised taking similar precautions used to help prevent the spread of flu. While there's not a coronavirus vaccine, there are other protective steps. Among them, washing hands with soap and water for 20 seconds, disinfecting surfaces touched by sick people, staying home when you're sick, covering up coughing and sneezes, and staying alert to updates from public health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Not everyone who becomes infected with coronavirus will need to be hospitalized, and for those who do, Carle has adequate isolation rooms and intensive care unit beds throughout its system, Healy said. About 80% of those who become infected will have just a mild disease, similar to a cold, he said. And the next piece is about a Champagne murder. Woman died after struggle. By Mary Shank, Urbana. Tanisha Jenkins put up a mighty struggle in the last moments of her life in a vain attempt to defend herself from cuts and blows, prosecutors allege. Given the manner of the Champagne woman's death Sunday, prosecutors intend to ask a jury to find that her alleged killer's actions were brutal and heinous, indicative of wanton cruelty. Should a jury convict Antoine Craig of her murder and find that his actions were brutal and heinous, he could be sentenced to life behind bars. The usual range for murder is 20 to 60 years in prison. Craig, 37, listed an address in the 1200 block of South Northwood Drive, Champaign. He kept his head lowered for the few minutes that Champaign County Judge Adam Dill took Thursday to arraign him on four counts of first-degree murder, including one that alleged he killed Ms. Jenkins after committing home invasion. There was a significant struggle, blood on the walls and floor, and cuts on both sides of her face with glass, Assistant State's Attorney Will Lynch told Dill. Craig is even alleged to have set fire to her hair, Lynch said. The charges allege that her death was a result of being beaten and smothered. Ms. Jenkins, 34, was found in her home about 11:40 a.m. Sunday. Her battered body was discovered by a sheriff's deputy in her bedroom, cold to the touch, suggesting she had been dead for several hours. The deputy had been sent to the home after a check welfare call from a concerned friend who had seen Craig on social media talking from Ms. Jenkins' home, claiming that she was just fine. Lynch said hours earlier on Sunday, Craig and Ms. Jenkins had been seen together in downtown Champaign by witnesses. After arguing in a parking lot, they left separately. Because of Craig's claims that she was fine and his refusal to let her speak to the friend, the sheriff's deputy went to her home in the 2200 block of Dale Drive in the Dobbins Downs subdivision in northwest Champaign. Lynch said the deputy could see a man on a phone in the house and that the man ran out the back door. The deputy noted that the door frame was broken and once inside witnessed the aftermath of what Lynch described as the significant struggle. After hearing Craig's prior convictions, including driving under revocation, aggravated driving under the influence, and possession with intent to deliver cannabis and obstructing justice, as well as his pending case for possession of a weapon by a felon, and possession of drug paraphernalia and cannabis, Dill set Craig's bond at $2 million. Lynch had asked that it be set at $10 million, while Assistant Public Defender Michael Anderson asked merely for a reasonable bond for the man who has lived in this community over 25 years. Anderson said Craig has two children, one of whom lives with him. Craig asked for time to hire his own attorney. Dill gave him until March 12th. And the next piece is about the college bribery scandal called Trial for Ex-Busey Board Member to Begin in 2021 by Ben Zigderman, Boston. Lawyers for former First Busey Board Member Elizabeth Kimmel argued this week that new evidence shows Kimmel and other parents were making donations in good faith, not making bribes to get their children into elite colleges. The evidence was turned over a day before Thursday's hearing in Boston, where a judge set the trial of Kimmel and six other parents to begin January 11, 2021. Another group of parents, including actress Lori Loughlin, is scheduled to go on trial October 5th. Kimmel has pleaded not guilty to charges that she allegedly paid nearly $500,000 to the Key Worldwide Foundation, which prosecutors say was a phony organization that passed payments on to coaches and athletic directors. Kimmel allegedly paid $275,000 in 2013 to help her daughter get into Georgetown University as a purported tennis athlete, and $200,000 in 2018 to help her son get into the University of Southern California as a purported pole vaulter. But Kimmel's attorneys said this week that evidence from the iPhone of Rick Singer, the owner of the foundation, shows he was instructed to lie to parents in wiretapped calls for the government. The very first page of these notes provides evidence undercutting the government's theory that the parent defendants knew and understood that the monies they sent to the schools and coaches were bribes rather than donations to the schools, athletic programs, Kimmel's attorney Robert Papeo wrote. For example, Mr. Singer wrote on October 2, 2018, "Loud and abrasive call with agents. They continue to ask me to tell a fib and not restate what I told my clients as to where their money was going, to the program, not the coach, and that it was a donation and they want it to be payment," the motion said. Kimmel's calls with Singer were a key part of the government's complaint fled in March 2019 against her. In a recorded call in October 2018 with Kimmel, Singer allegedly said, "I'm not going to tell the IRS that. I'm not going to say anything about the payments. The first group of payments for your daughter going to Gordy Ernst at Georgetown. Nor am I going to say anything about the $200,000. Well, $250,000 total for your son to Donna Heinel at USC. What I'm going to tell the IRS is that your donations were made to my foundation to fund underserved kids," Singer allegedly told Kimmel, according to a transcript of the call in the government's original complaint. "So I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page." To which Kimmel allegedly replied, "As far as I know, I don't know what you've done with the money I gave your foundation. I mean, you never really told me." 2 days after Kimmel was charged last year, she resigned from the First Busey Board of Directors. Kimmel was the second largest First Busey shareholder on the board, which her dad, August Chris Meyer Jr., had served on since 1962 until he retired last year. The Meyer family ran Midwest Television, which owned WCIA-TV until 1999, and in 2018 completed the $325 million sale of its San Diego TV and radio stations. And the next piece is about Black History Month, Illinoisans Honored for Achievements, by Ben Orner, Springfield. As February winds down, state officials do not want Illinoisans to forget about Black History Month. Treasurer Mike Frerichs presented several high-achieving Black Illinoisans with awards Thursday in the state capitol as recipients and other speakers celebrated Black history and urged the fight for equality to continue. "This is a critical turning point in our state's and country's history," said keynote speaker Jamel Wright, president of Eureka College, located outside Peoria. "We have a responsibility to make our votes count and our voices heard." Wright, who became the college's first Black and female president in 2017, reflected on the importance of voting rights more than half a century after the Civil Rights Movement. "While there was deeply rooted racism and resistance in the South," Wright said, Illinois' history is one of leading from the front in terms of voting rights, coalition building, and electing African Americans to office. She said this election year is a chance for black voters to reclaim the ballot, paying homage to famed civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr.'s Give Us the Ballot speech from 1957. Reclaim the ballot, because we understand that our fight isn't only a black fight. It's not only a woman's fight. This is a justice fight, she said. A wide range of people received awards. Among the most well-known recipients were former Illini wide receiver Malik Turner and Decatur School Board member Courtney Carson. Carson made national headlines in 2017 when he was elected to the board of the school district that once expelled him for gang violence. Now a Baptist preacher and an administrator at Richland Community College, Carson raised awareness of the education and poverty issues facing black people. Turner, a Springfield native who plays for the Seattle Seahawks, said he wants to give back to the community that helped him achieve his goals. I hope to accomplish things not just on the field, but off the field. And with the platform I'm given, hopefully I can be seen in this community as more than just an athlete, Turner said. Also receiving awards were State Representative Jahan Gordon Booth, Democrat, Peoria; Nikita Richards, a Bloomington resident who served on the Illinois Council on Women and Girls; Bonnie Hester, who represents AFSCME Union Retirees on the West Central Illinois Labor Council Board; Maurice Bridges, a U.S. Air Force veteran who works with fellow veterans at the Veterans of Foreign Wars; and Andrew Sforza, a barbershop owner in Springfield. And we'll take a look now at the opinions page, and we'll begin with an editorial called "Governor Asking for Trouble. Law enforcement officials are sounding a public safety alarm." Governor J.B. Pritzker wants to ensure that as many illegal immigrants who are convicted felons as possible remain in the state. That sounds crazy, right? But that's the bottom line impact of a new policy the governor recently implemented at the Illinois Department of Corrections and is actively defending. As Donald Trump continues to advance policies that tear apart families and terrorize children, the Pritzker administration is committed to using every tool at our disposal to protect immigrant families in Illinois, a Pritzker spokeswoman said in response to complaints about the new policy made by the sheriffs of Kankakee and Livingston counties. Pritzker's concern for illegal immigrant families in Illinois may be considered commendable in some circles, but his disinterest in or disdain for public safety raises serious questions about his judgment on this issue. Here's the crux of the issue. Illinois prisons hold an undisclosed number of immigrants who illegally entered this country, committed serious crimes, and were convicted of felonies and sentenced to prison. Because of their illegal entry into the country, they are subject to being detained upon release from state prison by federal immigration officials to determine whether they should be returned to their home countries. Kankakee County Sheriff Mike Downey said his office has coordinated with federal immigration officials and the State Corrections Department to pick up illegal immigrant convicted felons and hold them pending legal review of their status. Recently, however, the State Corrections Department ceased communications with Downey's office. As a result, illegal immigrants who complete their prison sentences and otherwise would be facing potential deportation are released. Livingston County Sheriff Tony Childress said he was dumbfounded to learn that what he called dangerous felons are being released without even a courtesy call. Of course, that process is generally how all inmates are released. But all inmates are not illegal immigrants, and there is a huge difference between the two. Illegal immigrant convicted felons are not citizens. They violated U.S. law to enter the country, and they committed crimes after doing so. Their status is not akin to those of children brought illegally by their parents to this country at a very young age, who know no home other than the U.S. These are convicted felons who pose a public safety threat, some more than others. Downey noted that his office transported 223 inmates from the State Corrections Department in 2019. Of that group, 55 were convicted of sex offenses, 11 of murder and attempted murder, and 33 of gun crimes. They are not worthy of the protection Pritzker is providing. He attributes his decision to a 2017 state law that restricts law enforcement's contacts with federal authorities on the issue of illegal immigration. But there's more to it than that. It's consistent with his open borders stance that any citizen of a foreign country who is able to gain entry illegally can remain, regardless of whether their conduct here is law-abiding or not. Pritzker may think that's a politically winning position, particularly in Cook County. But that approach poses an obvious public safety threat that opens the door to myriad serious problems. And we'll take a look now at the From Our Readers section and begin with a piece written by Wade Palmer of Champaign called Another Big Win for UI's McFadden. Illinois alum Tatiana McFadden was a winner again, this time on Project Runway, a TV fashion designer competition. McFadden wore the winning design between the Olympic athlete models designed by Nancy Volpe Behringer. McFadden competed in both wheelchair basketball and wheelchair track at the University of Illinois and graduated with a degree in human development and family studies. She also is an advocate for equal access for people with disabilities. She has won the wheelchair division of the Boston Marathon 5 times. McFadden, 30, has 17 Paralympic medals to her name, including several golds won between 2004 and 2016 in both the Winter and Summer Games. She has won the Grand Slam of marathons, Boston, London, Chicago, and New York City, 4 times. Tatiana has shared on Twitter how dreamy the experience was and congratulated her designer, Nancy Volpe Behringer, for the win. "Wow, I feel like this was all a dream. Thank you, Project Runway, for the amazing experience. I've always loved fashion, and it allows me to express myself however I want to." Huge congratulations to Nancy for creating such an exclusive design and changing fashion. And that again was written by Wade Palmer of Champaign. The next piece is written by Joseph T. Houska, H-O-U-S-K-A, of White Heath, and it's called Newspapers Too Important to Lose. First off, a thank you is overdue to the former organization and staff of this newspaper. Their service to all of us over the past several decades is hard to know. We need the printed word of the publishers, editors, and journalists to keep us informed of the world around us. Newspapers serve as documents for it all. Now, however, with all the changes, we have to figure out which dated paper on which day we're looking at. For example, we get Saturday news on the following Monday, or even Tuesday, if a holiday intervenes. This issue comes with Sunday's other half. Why not just forgo Saturday's half and include it in Monday's half along with Sunday's half? Who cares what happened 2 days ago? Then, too, TV listings, sports schedules, and scores are all useless, and Monday's dated paper would make sense. Then, too, with only a couple of pages of Saturday's issues, one page has been for criminals' mugshots. Why waste a page for that? Those should be relegated to only a quarter of a page, to the last page. Why promote copycat acts by giving newspaper coverage? Also, the new crossword puzzles aren't as enjoyable as the former ones, and their solutions on which dated page is confusing. Also, the same goes for the sports page and schedules, and latter, the scores of games played or which games are coming up. This is something to think about. I hope for the best to the new boys / girls on the block. P.S. Here's one of Oscar J's. If ignorance is bliss, why aren't there more happy people? And that again was written by Joseph T. Huska of White Heath. And the last piece is written by Tanya Wright of Champaign, called Give Everyone Chance to Live. President Ronald Reagan designated January 22, 1984, the 11th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, as the first National Sanctity of Human Life Day. Reagan said, "Each year, remarkable advances in prenatal medicine bring ever more dramatic confirmation of what common sense told us all along, that the child in the womb is simply what each of us once was, a very young, very small, dependent, vulnerable member of the human family." Many churches now organize activities observing the sanctity of human life throughout January. Marches for Life take place annually in major cities, including Washington, D.C. and Chicago. February is Black History Month. President Gerald Ford recognized Black History Month in 1976, urging Americans to seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishments of Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history. 1/3 of all abortions are African American babies. In New York, more African American babies are aborted than born alive. Many New Yorkers were among the first African Americans for various accomplishments. Vanessa Williams as Miss America, Arthur Mitchell as principal dancer for the New York City Ballet, Count Basie as Grammy winner, Jackie Robinson in baseball, and Shirley Chisholm as a member of Congress. My son's birth parents chose life, enabling me to adopt him. Whether he's the next Jackie Robinson, Count Basie, or whatever he becomes, his life is just as valuable as everyone else's. And that again was written by Tanya Wright of Champaign. And we'll turn now to the history section. In area history, in 1920, plans for acquiring a hospital under the terms of the will of the late Margaret B. Morris took shape with the acceptance of the offer of the S.H. Busey property on West University Avenue between Orchard Street and Kohler Avenue for $10,000. The large brick dwelling that stood on the north end of the long lawn has been a mansion. The plan was to remove the building and make room for the hospital, for which Mrs. Morris left $40,000. If erected, was to be called the Margaret B. Carl Hospital. In 1970, the University of Illinois issued a wide-open invitation for private enterprise to participate in the commercial development of Willard Airport, the second busiest airport in the state. That could mean a new terminal building, a motel, and restaurant, and a fixed base operator to service aircraft. In 2005, Rantoul Township High School officials said mixing boys and girls in physical education classes was causing the girls' participation level to drop. As a result, the district was going to work with its lawyer to review the federal law that requires co-ed classes and see if a waiver was possible. In international history, today's highlight, on February 28, 1953, scientists James D. Watson and Francis H. C. Crick announced they had discovered the double helix structure of DNA. On this date in 1844, a 12-inch gun aboard the USS Princeton exploded as the ship was sailing on the Potomac River, killing Secretary of State Abel P. Upshur, Navy Secretary Thomas W. Gilmer, and several others. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, February 28, 2020 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.